with people you know. To sign up, check the box on the back of your connection card or visit the Connect Center in the lobby after service.
For more on what's going on, check out your program, follow us on Twitter and Facebook, or visit us online at timberlakechurch.com. But for now, sit back and enjoy the message. Thank you for joining us today.
How about these ball hawks from the Pacific Northwest? Oh, I get it. Some might call them overconfident, a little bit full of themselves, but is it bragging if you back it up? Let's see. You hit them, they hit you harder. You get in their face, they get right back in yours. Basically, anything you do, they'll do better. Hold on. This isn't a sightseeing, we're just happy to get back to the big dance kind of thing for these guys. These fellas have meant business all season long. A hit first, ask questions later defense. A beast moves the earth when he runs. And a quarterback destined for this spotlight. So what do you say, Seattle? We all know you guys crank it all the way up to 12.
All right. You're excited. That's great. Now, some of you are worried. You thought that maybe Russell missed the game. But he's there in Arizona. In fact, I want to throw out a football. Do we have any Patriots fans? Just want to, really? Okay, I'm going to be careful. I don't want to hit someone. Go ahead and catch that. Now, it's going to be hard. It's fully inflated, so it might be a little bit hard for you to catch that ball. We just, you know. Hey, we're having a lot of fun here. It's great being able to see a number of my friends are down there, seeing them post pictures on Facebook, and it's almost like being there. Almost. But it really is exciting. Hey, by the way, just a little aside. Last weekend was an exciting weekend here at Timberlake for a lot of reasons. We had over 70 people come to our membership class. And across the three campuses at the various services, it was the first time on a normal weekend that we had over 3,000 people attending Timberlake Church. And that was pretty awesome to see that. Now, this weekend being Super Bowl weekend, my hopes are not as high. But I'm glad that you're here, and we're going to continue in this series, Restart. And what we're doing is we're looking at a book of the Bible, the book of James. We're going to learn about that book of the Bible, but it also has a lot of great practical application for us in areas that maybe we want to start that we've never done before, or where we need a mid-course correction in our lives. Today, we're looking at doing better with people. And so what I want to do is I want to get right to the scripture there, where it says in James 3:2, "We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check." So you're saying, well, what does this have to do with doing better with people? This is my contention, and this is your first fill-in. Doing better with people means I watch my words. It said, and I didn't, you know, come up with this research, but the average man says 6,000 words a day, and the average woman says 9,000 words a day. And one guy was trying to share that with his wife, to, you know, basically saying she talked too much. And she said, "We say that many words because we have to repeat half of what we say." And he said, "What?" You think about it. With our words can cause great problems, They can embarrass us, or they can move our life forward. I have a friend of mine who used to pastor in the Seattle area, and he was notorious for messing up his words, which is, by the way, a hazard of the profession. One time he was doing a wedding, and he, you know, he was doing the vows, and do you take this man to be your wedded husband? And so he turned to the bride, and he said, do you take this man to be your wedded wife? And she said, no. And he had no idea what was going on during that. He also was, you know, he would do the same thing I do at the end of the service, giving people the opportunity to accept Jesus into their life. And one time he was doing a service and asking people if they wanted to accept Jesus, except he got the name wrong. And he said, do you want to accept Jimmy into your life? And they're like, no, I want to believe in Jesus. You know, we all have these funny stories where we've misspoke, where we've said something that, yeah, it was embarrassing in the moment. And then a few days later, no one ever thought about it again. But that's really not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a pattern of behavior that has to do with our words. Not only do I speak a lot, but this has been an area in my own life that has been a constant struggle and where I've been able to make some progress. And the goal here is progress, not perfection. As we say, you can't relitigate the past, but we can do better in the future. In fact, let's look at what it says in Proverbs 18:21. It says, the tongue has the power of life and death. Isn't that true? Careless words can crush a person, but also a word said at the right time can change the course of a person's entire life. Someone who's confused can receive guidance and direction. Someone who's ready to give up all of a sudden gets hope. The right words, the right correction, can help a person go on a whole new course in life. There's power in our words, life and death. And in fact, let me put it this way. If you, in a marriage relationship, you show me a marriage that is struggling, and I will show you that there are more life-taking words, more critical words, more harmful words than life-giving words. You show me a marriage relationship where there's lots of life-giving words. You don't need to tell me anything else about that. I can tell you that's going to be a thriving relationship. You tell someone they're unimportant, and all of a sudden, people will start to live out that in their life. The Bible, in the Bible, there's 3,500 direct references to our words and how we use our words in relationship to doing better with God and that one, that relationship, but also doing better with people. Well, what are the power of my words? Number one, they can direct my path. Words really can chart a course. And we're going now really through this first part of the book of James, chapter 3. And James gives this example. He says, when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they're so large and are driven by strong winds, they're steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. You know, you think about that. Our words truly can direct our behavior. It can also reveal our heart as well. See, number two, our words, they can destroy what I have. The truth is it not only can destroy what I have, it can destroy what other people have as well. I don't even need to read the verses, I will, to prove this one. I've talked to women in the church, and been particularly men as well, whose confidence has been destroyed by a spouse who is maybe struggling with their own issues of low self-esteem, and they use cutting and biting words over year after year, and it really has started to destroy a person's confidence. It says this in the book of James, James 3, 5, and 6. The tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body. And that's why Solomon really gives us this instruction in Proverbs 21, 23. Those who guard their mouths and their tongues keep themselves from calamity. See, the truth is I cannot relive the past, but I can learn from the past in how I deal with my words. Now, James, he is really good at stating the problem. So much so, it's like, okay, you know, I got to refill my Prozac prescription after reading this part, because maybe I failed in this area. But there's also a positive as well, something we can learn from as we move forward. Well, let's look at this before we move on, though. Our words, they also demonstrate who I am becoming. Think about it. If my words are more loving, then I'm becoming a more loving person. If my words are more pessimistic, it's really revealing that I'm becoming more pessimistic in my heart. James says this, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who've been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. So what's the alternative to that? If the tongue can be so problematic, if our words can cause so much damage, is it just try not to say things that would hurt people? I think there's more than that. In fact, the Bible says that there are words of life that God speaks to us and we can speak to others. Psalm 19:14, and this is, I love how it's put in the New King James Version, so I use that translation. It says, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Don't you want to do that? I want to do that. And it's important as we do that to ask the question, where am I at? As an evaluation, so we can move forward positively in the future. And so when I look at this, I want to look at three evaluation questions and how am I doing? And it's going to be based on James 1:19. It says this, everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. So let's look a little deeper at that one verse and some verses that will also help us to understand that. And how are we doing with people, really by understanding how are we doing with our words? Number one, first question is, do people around me feel heard? It says everyone should be quick to listen. That's one of the things we're called to. It says in Proverbs 17:28, even fools are thought wise if they keep silent, and discerning if they hold their tongues. Abraham Lincoln wrote this, it's better to keep silent and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. The truth is, this doesn't come naturally to a lot of us. I'm one of those people who have few unspoken thoughts. And what I've had to learn over the years is that discipline of listening. And we all can do this. How many of us have jumped in, made a statement, come to a conclusion to find out that it was wrong, and we really didn't understand what was going on? My guess is virtually every one of us have done that. Well, that leads to the second question. Do I really understand? One of the things when I work with our staff here at church is I always teach them to lead with a question. When we are talking with someone, especially if it's a conflict situation and something's going on in someone's relationship or they have some maybe even theological issue, is always start with the question. And that's really what James is getting to when he says that we should be slow to speak. Otherwise, what can happen is we can create these self-fulfilling prophecies where it wasn't going to be explosive, but we created the situation where it becomes explosive. I remember when I first came to Timberlake about 6.5 years ago. The church was going through a season of transition, and then they get this new pastor in, and as the church changed and music changed and became broader in age group and all of that, I had these meetings in people's homes where I was going to explain what was going on, and I thought I would win everyone over with my charm, good looks, and wit. It didn't work that well. Well, as especially some of the people who are a little bit older in the church at the time had some difficulty with the changes. And I remember going into one meeting, and there was one older couple. Their names are Jerry and Ron. And as we were in that meeting, I remember it came time for people to share. And then they said, I'd like to share. And I'm like, oh gosh, here it is. The music's too loud or something like that. First thing he says is I love those video clips you show. That's the best thing I've ever seen in church. She said, I get more out of your messages than I have messages for years. And I thought, these are the best people I've ever met. And the truth is that I was going to come to a totally different conclusion. Jerry actually passed away recently. Literally, I went over, and not able to do this for everyone. I went over their house several times. Whenever I was sort of feeling down about things, I'd go over there and let them tell me how awesome I was. Because I needed that in my life. But I was thinking about what if I hadn't taken the time to listen? What I could have done was alienated the people that God had sent to be a blessing in my life. What if I really didn't understand? You know who I think we do this with the most? I think we do it with the people who are closest to us. Because you already know, let's face it, some of you, if you were going to be real honest, you would say, you know, I don't believe in mysticism or any of that, but I am a mind reader because I can read my spouse's mind. And what we do is we assume instead of listen. And then we don't dig deeper, and so we misunderstand. What self-fulfilling prophecies are you living out in your life? And how is it affecting those who work with you? How is it affecting your kids, your parents, your friendships, your academics, what's happening at school, your career, your life? Could it be time for a restart? Maybe let me put the question this way. Who in your life is crying out to be heard and to be understood? And honestly, I'm not saying that will solve everything. It'll solve more than you think it will, much more than you think it will. And I'm speaking especially to, this is for both men and women. But I know as guys, we just think like, hey, you know, if I say the right words, it'll fix everything. One of the things that it took me, I've been married for about 22 years now, so I learned this really quickly. It only took me like about 19 years to learn this, is my wife wanted to know that I not only heard her, but that I cared and that I understood. And at that point, whether we solved the problem, that would be helpful, but that was not essential. It says this, Solomon says this in Proverbs 29:20. He says, do you see a man who speaks in haste? He is single or soon will be. No, I just wanted to see if you were paying attention. there is more hope for a fool than for him. Now, there are people in our lives. Now, as I say this, I know there are people who want to talk and talk and honestly maybe even struggle with narcissism, and they'll never feel heard enough. I know there are exceptions. But if we gear our life just towards the exceptions and not towards everyone else, we're going to find our relationships will be diminished. Honestly, our life will be diminished as well. That leads to number three. How am I impacting people with my words? James goes right to the locus of what I would call emotional control, and that's the emotion that will often manifest as anger, which, by the way, is sort of the same one that is related to fear and, in many senses, depression as well. So how am I impacting people with my words? He says, be slow to become angry. And then this is in the Bible, but it's not in your outline. In the next verse, he says, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. It doesn't matter whether it's aggressive words or passive-aggressive words. Both are the same sin. Both are unrighteous anger. And we see this too. We see this face to face. I think we see it really. You know, as for some of us, we get super brave online. And it's important to remember that those words matter. In fact, I would encourage you, if you've, you know, ever been there, how many of you have ever, you don't have to raise your hand, but I have composed some brilliant emails. I just want to let you know that. And thankfully, I've sent virtually none of them. And really, you think about that, especially my whole rule in general. In fact, if you want to talk to me about a difficult situation, I've had people get frustrated with me. I will never do it over email. Never. I don't care how important it is, who you are, I will never do that, because it'll always be less effective than face-to-face, because you can't see emotion, you can't see body language. And so would encourage you, whether it's email or Twitter or Instagram or whatever the media is, be very careful, especially when it's something negative. I think one of the things we need to remember is, especially when we're online, we're on stage. And what we say can have as much impact, maybe more so, than when we're talking to a person face to face. Proverbs 2:6, it says, for the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. There was a humorist who, she passed away, and from, you know, a couple generations ago at this point. Her name was Irma Bombeck. She wrote a book way back when called If Life is a Bowl of Cherries, Why Am I in the Pits? And she wrote a lot of really funny stuff. One of the things that she wrote was actually, that I think was most impactful, wasn't very funny at all. But it really got to the point of all of this. She writes that she was about 30 minutes before a plane, and she settled down in a seat, and she was wanting some quiet and alone time, and just a little bit of peace. And then she heard the voice of an elderly lady who had come up to her and sat next to her, and she said, I bet it's cold in Chicago. And let me read this. She says, it's likely. I haven't been to Chicago in nearly 3 years, the elderly woman persisted, but my son lives there. That's nice, Bombeck said, her eyes glued to a book. She hoped the woman would see she was reading. But the older woman went on. My husband's body is on this plane. We've been married for 53 years. I don't drive, you know. And when he died, a nun drove me from the hospital. We aren't even Catholic. The funeral director let me come to the airport with him. And Irma Bombeck wrote,
I don't think I've ever detested myself more than I did at that moment. Another human being was screaming to be heard, and in desperation had turned to a cold stranger who was more interested in a novel than in real life. She didn't need any advice, any money, any assistance, any expertise. All she needed was someone to listen. She talked numbly and steadily until we boarded the plane, and then she found the seat in another section, Bombeck writes. As I hung up my coat, I heard her plaintive voice say to her seat companion, "I bet it's cold in Chicago." The truth is, we think about the negative we can do with our words. But there are so many people that God has put in our sphere that literally life can change. Their faith can change when they know that not only we are listening, but that God cares as well. See, here's a good goal. Harness the power of my words. I can remember more than a couple times in my life. One of those times in my life where I needed some correction. And I remember someone sort of in a very, very gentle way saying, "You know, I sort of see what's going on with you." And I'm like, "Oh, here it comes." And the person said, "Here's the only thing I want you to know. I really care. And I really care about you." And for me, that was much more powerful even than a strong word of correction. Proverbs 15:4 says, "The tongue that brings healing is a tree of life." So as we think about this, as we think about how can I use my words for the good, to be life-giving and not life-taking. You say, is this really a church issue? Well, you know what's interesting? In the book of James, virtually every chapter he brings up this issue, more than any other subject in the entire book. And James is all about living your faith. And he's saying, if you can get this one right, it's going to affect so much else in your life. So I want to just quickly run by these thoughts. Use the acrostic think to help you. Is when we're talking to people, we might want to consider our words. Say, is it true? Gossip is probably one of the most damaging things that we can see in our lives or in another person's life. Is what we're going to say helpful? Are we really part of the solution, part of the problem? Or really, is this not our assignment to be involved? Is it inspiring? Are we helping other people see what God sees in them? Is it necessary? Especially if this is where you're sort of correcting someone. You know what, for some of us in our relationships, especially I've talked to people who've had series of relational difficulties, and I do say this in love, is you don't need to say everything that really you think you could bring input. Is it necessary for me to speak into that? And K, is it kind? Here's what it says in Luke 6:45. "A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of." See, what I understand is that when my words get out of balance, when they get too harsh, when maybe they're more on the negative than the positive, more on the faithless than on the faith-filled, that really what that's speaking to is what's going on in my heart. And so when we want to do better with people, I think that the very place to start is to say, "God, I want you to renew my heart." What we're going to do in a moment is we're going to receive communion together. And communion, as we receive communion, we get to not only hear the scripture of God's heart for us, but we get to remember the reality of what God has done for us through his Son, Jesus Christ. Will you pray with me? Lord, I thank you that as we come to the communion table, Lord, that we can hear